tell you what, I'm feeling really good about this program. What's going on? Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. It is the Tuesday edition of the show, and we are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, you know Rocket can. All right, so why am I feeling good about this? Good interviews, good topics, good takes, and I feel good about you clones. Like, for some reason, I feel like you're going to bring it. 1-800-636-8686. We are front-loading three interviews, all in the first half of the program, but that does not mean you can't get through. You can. You should try right now. Hit me up. Once again, 1-800-636-8686. Twitter still works. People still use it. Still a good platform. Hit me up at Jim Rome. Best tweets get read on the air. If it's an exceptional tweet, I will retweet it. If it's the best tweet ever, I will retweet it with comment. And then you will get lots of followers. Also, you can still email the program at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. So the interviews are as follows. Coming up next segment, Coach Ham. Leonard Hamilton, Florida State head basketball coach, coming up in about 20 minutes. Top of hour number two, Kenyon Drake, running back with the Arizona Cardinals. I'm going to chase that by having a conversation with Dan Wojcicki, an NBA reporter for the LA Times. In fact, having said that, I think that's where I want to start right now. Dan Wojcicki coming up next hour. Third hour is wide open. Let me start with the LA Lakers. Lakers beaten by the Wizards last night in OT, 127-124. Now, that in and of itself is not a big problem. I mean, they lost to the Heat on Saturday. Again, that in and of itself, not a reason to panic. But they did lose to the Nets on Thursday night. Again, in and of itself, not a reason to freak out. But when you string those three losses together and you combine them into a three-game losing streak that the Lakers have right now, then it's a little more concerning. And then you take that three-game losing streak and you make that part of them losing four out of five. Then you start to actually grip a little bit, especially when last night's loss did come in overtime. That's a game where they had a 17-point lead in the second half. When you're looking to stop the bleeding, that's something that can't happen. But it did. For instance, you finished that off last night in regulation, and then LeBron does not have to play nearly 16 of the final 17 minutes of that game. You finished that off last night, and then you don't give up even more ground to the Utah Jazz. But they were not able to do so. Again, they're going to be a different team without their second and third leading scorers. That's pretty obvious. Anybody who thought that they wouldn't be. Anybody who thought they could just keep rolling right along without Anthony Davis and Dennis Schroeder was just begging. So the issue is not the fact that they've lost three straight or that they've lost four out of five. What it is they could have used a win last night. That would have been awfully nice. They could have used a win last night, and they were up by 17, and they still couldn't finish. Once again, you finish that game, you get yourself a little breathing room. Finish that game, and then you don't have to answer questions after the game about how it felt to have Bradley Beal stab you in the chest on three straight possessions.
20 turnovers for LA. Here's Beal down. Got it in his hands. Bradley Beal scores. 26 points now for the Wizards off those Laker turnovers.
Three straight possessions. And then followed that up with this circus shot.
Two-point game. Beal and Westbrook going to work. Beal almost lost the handle. Gets it back. And wow, what a finish with a left hand by Bradley Beal.
And then he chases that with another bucket for good measure. And then you've got Russell Westbrook jumping in there, ripping the knife out of Beal's hand, and then doing a little carving of his own.
Westbrook to inbound. They get it to Bertans. Now Westbrook has it, and it's got to be a continuation. They knew Westbrook was the guy they wanted to foul. It was a foul by LeBron James.
All right, so at the end of the game, you're looking at Beal, and you're looking at Westbrook. Beal goes 33-7-6. Westbrook goes 32-14-9. That'll happen. Great players will do that. Again, in and of itself, not a reason for Laker fans to panic and start jamming their car flags back in the storage. But what I'm saying is this. Pretty much exactly what I said and warned Laker fans about when AD went down. The chance to win number 18 is not gone. It just got tougher, a lot tougher, because the Lakers are now going to have to exert even more energy in the regular season, coming off a short offseason in a year where they're trying to repeat. Repeating as champ again is one of the toughest things to do in all of sports. Doing it on a shortened offseason is even tougher. Doing it on a shortened offseason with your second best player dealing with a leg injury makes it really difficult. And now the team has to answer questions about whether or not LeBron is playing too much, whether or not LeBron is carrying too much of a load. Something that LeBron obviously does not want to hear about.
I mean, I'm resting now. I'm resting when I get in my car and head home. I'm resting when I get home. I'll rest tomorrow. You know, I think this whole narrative of, LeBron needs more rest, or I should take more rest, or I should take time here, it's become a lot bigger than what it actually really is. I've never talked about it. I don't talk about it. I don't believe in it. Fast turnaround from last season. And we all wish we could have more rest. But, you know, I'm here to work, and I'm here to punch my clock in and be available to my teammates. And if I'm hurt or if I'm not feeling well, then we can look at it then. But I have nothing but honest people around me, but I'm also honest with myself as well. Me having the love for the game and me being able to be available to my teammates is more important than anything.
So, of course, this guy's not asking out of games or looking for his load to be managed. That's not who he is. That's not how he's wired. But sometimes you do have to protect the guy from the guy, especially that guy. And if you're going to ask that guy to work overtime, you better get a win. Otherwise, you're depreciating that asset even further, and you have nothing to show for it. Because while the Lakers have lost 3 in a row and 4 of 5, the team they're looking up at, the Utah Jazz, are straight abusing fools every single night. And look who LA has to deal with tomorrow night. That's right, the same Utah Jazz. Now, you can't win a championship in February, but you can lose one because you can make the road to that title a lot tougher. Right now, the Lakers would have to beat the Clippers in the playoffs for a chance to face the Jazz, while Utah gets to wait for those two teams to beat the hell out of each other and then take on the battered winner. For the last time, losing last night was not a backbreaker. There is no reason to smash the panic button yet, Laker fan, but if I were you, I would know where it is. Especially since you know Utah is looking to break your dudes' faces tomorrow night. Would have been nice to win that one. Would have been nice to stop the bleeding with a 17-point lead. And they couldn't do it. 1-800-636-8686. All right, so those are my thoughts, Laker fan. You tell me, how concerned are you about this? You don't want to fall too far behind. And you don't want to burn LeBron out. And LeBron's just going to keep balling. All right, some other things I want to get to today. Well, what do you know? Seattle Mariners president and CEO Kevin Mather resigned. Right, good move, Kev. Good move. Should have thought of that before you got all nice with your takes and your address to the Rotarians. Hope that was worth it. And as always, I know that it was not. I've got a recap on that, which I will get to a little bit later on. Other topics today, I've got an update on the Detroit Lions and their head coach, Dan Campbell. You remember Dan Campbell's intro presser? My man went all cannibal with it. He was looking to eat kneecaps. Lots of kneecaps. Well, he's made his first statement since that day. And I am very happy to say, very happy to announce, he is the one guy who is not walking it back. This is the one guy who's not saying, hey, you know what? That's not what I'm about. That's not what I meant. That's not who or what we do around here. I mean, in effect, the guy's saying that's pretty much who and what we do around here. Maybe not eat flesh, but he's not coming off that statement, which I respect. In fact, I love it. Now all you have to do, coach, is go out and back it up. Speaking of Seattle, I want to talk about the Seahawks and what's going on with Danger Russ.
Seattle.
I think the Hawks better be very careful how they handle this. Remember a couple of weeks back when it became public knowledge that Russ was not real happy. And then when that story broke, Russ had a chance to deny it, but did not. And said that, you know what, it'd be nice to get a little protection around here. I've been sacked a lot. And Seattle was quick to say, hey, oh, he's not going anywhere. He's not going anywhere. This is a non-starter. Well, that's not what they're saying right now. Now there's speculation that if you want Russ, here is the starting price. So I'd like to talk about that. I mean, if what they're talking about is something they can actually get for a 33-year-old quarterback, even one as great as that, then maybe you think about it. But I got a better idea. How about you take that 33-year-old quarterback, the best quarterback you've ever had and ever will have, and give the guy the help he needs. Give the guy the support that he needs. Give the guy an offensive line. Maybe you do that instead. Also, in terms of the Mariners, you've got your point and your counterpoint. Over here, you've got the Mariners, a bullcrap organization that is really poorly run. Over here, you have the San Diego Padres. Point, counterpoint. Padres are extremely well-run now, and they know exactly what they're doing. And they had Fernando Tatis Jr., he of the 14-year contract, out front and center. And I love what I heard from him. I love what I saw from him. And I love this notion of he wants a statue contract. Then again, if somebody came to me and said, hey, Rome, what do you think of the idea of us giving you a lifetime contract and you getting to live and work in the city of San Diego and never have to go anywhere else? I think I would take that. I think I would like that very much. And at the end of that, I could have a statue? Hell yes. So we will get into that. Hey, and by the way, shouldn't I have a statue already in San Diego? Why do I not have one? I don't want to make it about me. I think I can rationalize a statement like that. I think I can back that up. Also, one more topic I want to get to. Sunday's finish at Riv should have been all about Max Homa, which is why I led the program yesterday by talking about Max. Good jungle guy. However, one of the big takeaways, and I was very careful not to get into this yesterday because I don't want to take any of the shine off Max. However, Tiger Bro Nation was losing its collective bleep because their guy showed up for an interview with Jim Nance. I mean, after all, Tiger was the host of the tourney. And my man, let's just say, looked a little out of sorts. Looked a little out of sorts. And no, personal appearance still is not show fodder. Well, yes, it's still not show fodder. However, when you're one of the world's most famous athletes ever, and we haven't seen or heard from you in a while, and the last time we knew what was going on, you were getting cut on again, and then you show up looking all, how do I put it? Fat? Well, fat might not be the word. Bloated? I don't know. My man seemed a little bit off, and I'm not sure if he was, and I'm not sure what he was dealing with. I'm just saying, looking at him and listening to him, I am not going to accuse him of anything that I don't know about. I'm just going to say that he does not look and sound like a dude who's going to be right for the Masters.
Happens to us all.
I'm just saying. Now, maybe something happens between now and then. Maybe things change between now and then. But if you're looking for a point in time and a grill that looked out of sorts, that's your point in time. So we will get into that, but we will get into that responsibly. We can speculate responsibly. But there is a reason why I did not get into that yesterday. Romy, the Lakers are in trouble. Signed, townhouse guy when he brings too many guests to the community pool. Aaron and Beacon Hill, and it would appear that town home owner or renter has jumped the day. Townhomes are going to be a thing, I guess. I can tell already. Let's see. Hey, Jim, take our advice. Without Anthony Davis, the Lakers need to pull together and combine resources in order to get what they want to be. Signed, townhouse community guy, just as I thought. You're setting the tone, and it's not a good tone. Drew in West LA. I mean, townhome guy makes me long for the days of stay-at-home dad. Romy, I saw on your Instagram that you were up before 5 a.m., I'd get up that early, but my neighbor that I share a wall with said that he can hear my alarms. Regards, townhome guy. Ashley, you too?
War Lady clones.
Hey, Ashley, one of my bosses once said this to me back in the day when I was a scuffling update guy. And not yet. I was just kind of kind of still trying to make my mark. I had not yet succeeded as an actual talk show host. I was doing sports updates in San Diego, and they put me on the morning show as the update guy. And the morning show guy was a brilliant guy, but he was a real troublemaker, as all good morning guys are. And I remember my boss saying, dude, your future's bright. Do not let this guy drag you down. Do not let this guy drag you down to his level. And I was kind of in awe of the guy. Like, I looked up to the guy because he was a wild man. Ashley, do not let them drag you down to their level. Your future is bright, Lady Clone. Do not let them drag you down.
More Lady Clone.
All right, when we come back, Leonard Hamilton joins us. Florida State head basketball coach coming up next. Kenyon Drake, top of hour number two. So one quick question. Have I asked you this? Why is Old Trapper Beef Jerky so amazing? Well, there is something to be said for a family business, which stands by quality and produces the world's finest beef jerky. And they do. Do not get fooled by other brands. All beef jerky is not one and the same. You want to make sure you choose Old Trapper. You know, the one where you can see the quality right through their iconic Clearview package. That's why they do that. So you can see exactly what you're buying. Every bite of Old Trapper is tender, it's never tough, because they use only the best ingredients. From their lean strips of beef, seasoned with top quality spices, to the real wood-fired smoke, Old Trapper delivers quality in every single bite. And it comes in four amazing flavors. You have Old Fashioned, you have Teriyaki, you have Peppered. And if you need a little more zing, there's Hot and Spicy, all full of good protein to satisfy even your manliest hunger cravings. And it provides true sustained energy. What I'm saying to you is Old Trapper is just a better way to snack. Make it a part of your weekly grocery list. Keep a good supply on hand for you and your family. If you don't see it, ask for Old Trapper by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper. Clones, what is your beef?
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
So once again, on our programming note, we are going with three interviews in the first half of the program. So if there's something you want to say, you take a shot right now or wait till the back end. Lots of things to get done. We are joined right now by the head basketball coach of Florida State. He is the winningest coach in Florida State history, the recipient of four National Coach of the Year awards, five-time Conference Coach of the Year, named to the Naismith Coach of the Year late season watch list, led FSU to the first ACC regular season championship in school history last season, and they pick up right where they left off, 13-3, still in first place in the ACC, number 9 in the coaches' poll, and at Miami tomorrow. Friend of the program, he is Leonard Hamilton. Leonard, it's so good to have you back. You and I did speak at the beginning of the year, but let me check in with you as always. How are you doing, and how is your life right about now, Coach?
Well, Jim, obviously I'm probably like a lot of coaches, just trying to stay safe, trying to get through the season, trying to make sure that your kids are being in good shape from a basketball playing standpoint, and that we are prepared to see whether or not we can finish the season without a lot of issues.
I got that. Leonard Hamilton's joining us. All right, so why don't we talk about what you have right now? You have won three straight, including a 21-point win over number 7 Virginia. That was the Cavaliers' worst conference loss in 4 years. So what do you make of how your team is playing at this point in the season?
Well, the good thing about our team, Jim, is that we are still developing. You know, we're not quite there yet. You know, we still got a feeling of area where we can improve in. We've been fortunate, you know, to have some experienced guys and some new that are changing roles, and we have some new guys that are coming in, learning the system. So the good thing about this team, we're finding ways to win while we're still developing.
We are talking to Leonard Hamilton. I'm going to talk about the new guys in a minute, but what's interesting to me is I mentioned off the top, the program had its first ACC regular season title in school history last year. You're back in first place in the ACC again this year, but the thing is, you're doing that having had two lottery picks in the 2020 draft and a third player who's with the Jazz right now. How do you explain the fact that you're filling up the NBA with that kind of talent, but the team just keeps getting better?
I think I have a great staff of guys who develop and skilled developers, and our guys are improving and getting better. And so the guys who are role players 1 year move into different roles the following year, and they're prepared mentally, emotionally, you know, to step into those roles. And we've been a little inconsistent this year because some of our new guys are kind of learning and growing, and then our old guys who are moving into different roles, are still adjusting. So if we can just, like I said earlier, if we can keep winning while we're developing, I think we can be a pretty good team once we get into the postseason.
Florida State head basketball coach Leonard Hamilton is back on the show. You know, one of the terms that's used around the program is, quote, new blood, as in the guys are the new bloods. Now, when you keep having success like that, at a certain point, do you become blue bloods, or do you want to maintain that new blood mentality instead?
Well, we're probably about 75 years behind some of the blue blood statuses in our league. When you look at our conference, you know, with North Carolina, Duke, Notre Dame, Louisville, Syracuse, some of the top winning programs in the history of college basketball, those guys got 65, 70 years of successful experience ahead of us. When Florida State was in the Dixie Conference and Independent and in the Metro, these guys were in the Big East and the ACC. So we still have a lot of ground to work up, so, to catch up on. We're not going to ever catch up with some of these schools. So we coined our own phrase, the Blue Bloods are not inviting us to the party. So, you know, we crashing it as Blue Bloods. So, as New Bloods. And that's kind of, it gives our kids a little area of their own that they can feel proud of.
I like that. Leonard Hamilton's joining us. Now, one of your assistants, C.Y. Young, told The Athletic, quote, culture doesn't graduate. To me, another great line. You and I have talked about culture in the past. How do you make sure that it doesn't graduate, that it doesn't leave when you are sending guys to the NBA and guys overseas?
Well, there's no doubt that our culture is very strong because we're different. You know, we rotate more players. We play at a faster pace offensively. We still are picking up 94 feet on the defensive end. And we're moving the ball, we're making passes, and we're playing unselfish. And so, and that requires you to have a deep rotation. So guys who come to our program come in with an understanding, this is what I'm looking for and this is what I want. We just try not to put a square peg in a round hole. We try to recruit guys who fit who we are and it's working. We try to avoid putting a kid in a situation that he doesn't particularly feel comfortable with. Some kids need to go somewhere where they're playing 35, 37 minutes even when they're tired. Well, our guys play to exhaustion, and they actually come out, and they cheer for the guy who goes in and replaces them.
All right, so we're talking about culture here. Leonard Hamilton's my guest. And then part of that culture is the fact that, as Young says, you're not going to recruit every single five-star guy. Not everybody, to your point, Leonard, is going to be a good fit for the program. And you talk about humility. You and I have talked in the past, for instance, about Scotty Barnes and his humility back at the start of the season. So what do you make of how his game has grown over the course of this season?
I don't think there's anybody in college basketball has had more of a transition than Scotty Barnes. He played power forward his entire life. In other words, when most guys who were point guards at this level, they was playing point guard for their team when they were 8 years old. Scotty Barnes has made the transition seamlessly because he has a high IQ, he's humble, he's eager to learn, he's watching, he's listening to his teammates, and he is really doing a fantastic job. And he hasn't even scratched the surface of his potential. He's made the adjustment better than anybody I've ever seen in my life to go from power forward to point guard on a top 10 ranked team in the country that's number one in a Power 5 conference. That speaks for itself.
Now, I know you're not going to make it about you, and I would never look for you to make it about you, but you said recently, quote, I don't have a whole lot of original ideas. I try to steal as much as possible. Personally, I'm not really buying this notion that you don't have a whole lot of original ideas, but who are some of the people or some of the teams that maybe you have borrowed ideas from?
Well, see, I've been very fortunate, Jim, in my career to have worked for some outstanding people. My first guy I worked for is the late Lake Kelly at Austin Peay State University. I think he was a genius, just an absolute total genius in his philosophy of basketball, and I was very fortunate to have a chance to work with him. At the beginning of my coaching career, a detailed guy who gave guys freedom, who played an unbelievable aggressive style of basketball, and we had a chance to go in there and turn Austin Peay program around. And then I left from there and went to Kentucky, you know, the winningest program in the history of college basketball, where I picked up other ideas. And John Thompson and watching how he played, and Nolan Richardson in 40 minutes from hell, system that he had, and I was Patino, Eddie Sutton. I mean, I have picked up things along the way. And I remember even watching John Wooten coach as a youngster. And more than anything else, you know, I love how Red Auerbach played with a deep rotation that some of his Hall of Fame people came off the bench. And so I tried to pick up things that I think work with my philosophy, and that's why we're utilizing the system and style that we have today.
And
a lot of guys are attracted to our program because they like the way we play, and some guys want to be in a program where everybody gets touches and the culture is predicated on unselfish spirit.
I was going to jump in there, Leonard, and say, and you have a lot of that depth right now. For instance, now win over Pittsburgh, you had 10 guys play at least 9 minutes. Now, you mentioned all the guys that have influenced you. You have influenced a number of others. You're not just sending talent to the NBA. As an example, Dennis Gates had led Cleveland State to the Horizon League regular season title. He was with you 8 years at Florida State. How much pride is there for you to see him having the levels of success that he's having with his own program now?
Well, there's no doubt that we talk on a regular basis, and along with Andy Enfield, and I don't talk to Bill Self as much, but Bill was on my staff at Oklahoma State. You know, I feel very fortunate to have had the intuition to hire great, smart people who helped me be where I am today, and those guys have moved on and doing great jobs where they are. I mean, I can't take all the credit for that because those guys were super sharp coming in, but I am proud of the fact that the guys who come through our program are going on and having a lot of success.
Leonard Hamilton, my guest. Listen, one last thought. Last night you were part of a panel on the ACC Network, and you were talking about social justice and racial equality. What did you take away from that conversation?
Well, I'm a proponent, Jim, of doing something substantial. You know, there's a lot of symbolic gestures that we make, you know, that I think raises the consciousness of people. But until we have a movement where the federal government mandates an official, organized, thorough program to understand how do we get to this point and why we're where we are and how is it affecting our society and what is the plan for us to improve it or correct it. Right now, we just got so many different agencies and so many different people doing their thing. And it means an awful lot to be doing that. But until it comes down from the top, I'm not real sure we're going to be like a dog chasing his tail, going around and around in circles. Because if you remember correctly, back in the mid-60s, we had the Kerner Commission who did an authentic, thorough study, but we never used the information that was gathered. I mean, we're in a very interesting way now where we are discriminating against people who we don't even know. I mean, in other words, and so even in our school systems, in our education system, there's nothing going on in our education system that gives us an opportunity how to deal with conflict resolution. How do you relate to people who don't look like you or who don't act like you? How can we just come up with a way how we get along? And right now, I mean, when I look around and see a lot of our politicians saying, what are y'all talking about? There's no problems in our society. Everything's fine. Well, we got a problem.
So, Leonard, are you hopeful and optimistic, or are you frustrated?
I'm a little bit of all. We have good people that are trying, but it's not official, and we're not all on the same page. I mean, we can put guys on the moon, we can't figure out how to get along. Something wrong with that picture.
There is something wrong with that picture. Leonard Hamilton joining us. He's the head basketball coach of Florida State, the winningest coach there. He is a friend of the program. Florida State's number 9 in the coaches poll, and they are at Miami tomorrow night. Leonard, always good to touch base with you. Always good to have a conversation with you on this program, and I do appreciate the relationship. Great to have you back.
Thank you.
Leonard Hamilton. All right, your thoughts on that? Such a great line, isn't it? We can put a man on the moon, but we cannot all just get along. And he's right. 1-800-636-8686. Top of the hour, I've got Kenyon Drake of the Arizona Cardinals. Next hour, Dan Wojcicki of the LA Times to talk some NBA. Still ahead, CEO, all-around dope, Kevin Mather resigned. As always, hope that was worth it. Hope those comments to those 2 dozen Rotarians that you were trying to impress was worth your career. There's so much more to that, too, than just that. I want to get into what that represents and what that means to the entire organization, which thinks that it's going to distance itself from him, but it can't. It can't. I mentioned Tiger Woods did an interview with Jim Nance. I want to discuss what that may or may not represent. Danger Russ and whether or not he's on the trade block and what it would take to get him. Fernando Tatis Jr. gets a huge contract and is talking about statues, and I could not love that any more than I do. All of that is still ahead, but first here.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
March Madness right around the corner. This weekend, CBS has got two full days of college hoops triple headers. The action gets underway Saturday at noon Eastern with a battle in the Big 12 between Texas and my guy Chris Beard at Texas Tech. Sunday, three more games capped off with a late afternoon Big Ten showdown. Iowa taking on Ohio State. Got a couple of college basketball triple headers on Saturday and Sunday, beginning at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific. The road to the Final Four, of course, is on CBS. Let's talk about the Mariners. I need you to hear me out on this. So CEO and all-around genius Kevin Mather resigned yesterday after the comments he made to the Rotary Club had surfaced and exposed him for who and what he is. As a mini refresher, Mather, one of the architects behind the longest postseason drought in baseball, called one of the most important players on the team overpaid, called the best pitcher, quote, very boring. He also seemed to admit manipulating service time with the organization's best prospects. He criticized an all-star from Japan and an elite prospect from the Dominican Republic for their skills in a second language. And why did he do all this? To impress a bunch of Rotarians. Team chairman and managing partner John Stanton said yesterday that he was, quote, extremely disappointed, end quote, when he heard what Mather had to say.
His comments were inappropriate and do not reflect our organization's feelings about our players, our staff, or our fans. There is no excuse for what was said, and I will not try to make one. I offer my sincere apology on behalf of the club and my partners to our players and our fans. We must do and we must be better. We have a lot of work to do to make amends, and that work is already underway.
And isn't this how this always goes? The boss who made the comments resigns. The boss's boss says they're inappropriate and do not represent the club, and they hope that everybody moves on. Except that doesn't quite work, not here, because Mather's comments do represent the team. He was the president and CEO of the team. If the president and the CEO of the team does not represent the team and set that team's culture, then who does? This wasn't some doofus mid-level manager spouting off on Twitter. This was your president and CEO running his mouth to impress a couple of dozen Rotarians. He was showing how big league he is by bragging about messing with service time, clowning international players, and even used the word tummy in public, which in and of itself is a fireable offense.
My big tummy out there in left field.
The issue is not that Kevin Mather said this on camera and that somehow that footage leaked. The issue is he said it, and he said it because he believes it. The problem is not that he got caught on a hot mic. The problem is the belief system in the first place and that he acted on it. These were beliefs that he had and that guided how he approached his job and how he ran the team as team president and CEO. This is not some rando working in the souvenir shop or selling beer and peanuts at the yard. This is your team president and CEO. So there's no way that nobody around Kevin Mather didn't know that this is the way he thought. In what organization do people not know how the president and the CEO thinks? Everybody in every organization knows what the boss thinks and what the boss wants. That's how it works. Everybody knows what the boss believes and how the boss wants that organization to behave and conduct itself. So there's absolutely no way that John Stanton and everybody else associated with the Mariners didn't know. It's not like you break out your new material for the Bellevue Rotarians. Trust this, Mather was out there playing his greatest hits. But now Stanton and the rest of the organization are absolutely shocked. I mean shocked to learn that Mather is wired this way. Hell no. I mean, come on. I don't buy that bullcrap, and neither should you. The issue now is the rest of us know what Stanton and the others already knew about Mather. The issue is the rest of the world knows the Mariners' values and their feelings about their players, their staff, and their fans. Because if the president and the CEO doesn't embody the values of the organization, well, he also creates them and he sets them. But keep in mind, not everybody's pissed. Not everybody's pissed. Josh Donaldson, for instance, is happy about it. He's happy in the sense that this guy admitted to manipulating service time. He tweeted, quote, "Thank you, Kevin Mather. I sincerely mean it. You just said what everyone already knew. But now we, MLBPA, have official evidence that is going to help a lot of players. Again, thank you. Bravo." End of tweet. Yeah, I guarantee you he's not the only decision maker in baseball or in the Mariners organization who thinks about service time and international players the way this guy does. This is why it's a complete joke for Stanton to say, quote, "This does not represent our organization's feelings about our players, staff, and fans." Hey, John, if the president and CEO does not represent the organization's feelings about your players, staff, and fans, then who the hell does? And if you've been following along closely, you might also remember Stanton from statements that he made back in July 2018. Quote, "Today the Seattle Times published a story about the Seattle Mariners workplace environment. We do not believe it accurately reflects the values and culture of our organization." End quote. Isn't that exactly the thing he just said? That was the opening to a statement about accusations of sexual harassment directed by three Mariner executives by multiple female employees. I'm not going to read you the entire statement from Stanton. I'll just skip to the part that has a subheading of its own. Quote, "Issues involving Mariners president and CEO Kevin Mather." Look, I'm not going to say there's a problem with the Mariners, but when you have to put out multiple statements about issues involving your president and CEO, maybe there is a problem with the Mariners. And it's part of that statement from 2018, quote, "Nearly 10 years ago, two female former Mariners employees complained of inappropriate language and treatment in the workplace by then executive VP Kevin Mather." So he was accused of sexual harassment, and according to reports, settlements of more than $500,000 were paid out. And yet this guy was later promoted to team president and then the team CEO. So you guys knew exactly who this guy was, and yet you still kept him around. I hate to say it, but these are the values of your organization. If you keep a guy like that around and you promote him, that's who you are. And on top of that, it's not like you can point to some crazy track record on the field and say, yeah, you know, this guy was accused of sexual harassment, and he manipulates service time, and he makes fun of people learning English as a second language. But man, he is killing it on the field, because he's not. The Mariners have been fine with sucking and with having lousy guys around. So again, the issue was not that he was on camera when he said this junk. It's that he believes this junk. And he's been with the organization for years and was promoted repeatedly. Mather did not get caught on that video call. The entire Mariners organization did. Same as they ever were. Embarrassing. And per usual, hope that was worth it. At least you gave those Rotarians a show. Of course, you let the entire world know who and what you and your organization are about. But I'm sure those two dozen Rotarians got a show. I'm sure they enjoyed it. Hope that was worth it. 1-800-636-8686. Am I the only one with a take? Am I the only one here with a take? There's got to be somebody else. It's got to be somebody else who wants to unload. Let's go to L.A. Bob in L.A. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
I'm pissed, Jim. I'll tell you what, Jim. All I know is that Major League Baseball, in deadening the ball, I can't believe they did that. Don't they know that people go to the ballpark, all right, to see people display their talents, especially hitters, in their full power and get to their to its full potential? They want to see a guy turn on a nice 100-mile-an-hour fastball and crunch it so damn hard that it looks like a golf ball going out to the outfield. They want to see that they don't want to see it land just over the fence. They want to see it in the second deck, the third deck, even, of all things, hit it out of the ballpark. Ever since this nonsense started, Jim, all I can think of is I'd want to find the guy who thought this whole thing up and stand him in front of the plate. I'd go out there on the mound, make my full windup, give him my hardest fastball I can and hit him right in his knucklehead. I don't care what they say, Jim. Things like this ruin baseball. I don't know why these suits, why don't leave the game alone? It doesn't need tweaks like that and everything. In other words, this deadening the baseball sucks.
All right, now that's where I got to draw a line, Bob. Saying something sucks is not a take. Weren't you the same guy, Bob, who, when talking about LeBron, said, quote, run his ass down.
Run his ass down.
Yes, I thought so. All right, so my man feels pretty strongly about deadening the ball. Hey, Bob, you're right. Why not just let them shoot themselves full of roids in the on-deck circle, too? In fact, why don't we eliminate pitchers from the game and let the batters go to the plate, not with bats, but drivers? Put the ball on a tee and let them just swing out their ass and see if they can hit everything out of the yard. All right, Bob in L.A. Yeah, I said I was looking for somebody to unload, and he did, on this notion of deadening the ball. Kenyon Drake joins me when we come back.